Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, it almost never happens, but if you were to bring a farm animal to a piano recital, Fiacre Garvey would probably be perfectly comfortable with it. From a farming background, Fiacre was on his way to becoming a vet, but eventually had to choose between his love of music and his love of animals. The music eventually won. Fiacre now lives most of the time in London and tours throughout Europe. Fiacre, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
But I assume you were playing the piano since you were a child.
I started at 4 years old, I think I was, and I went to it. There's an amazing school in Dublin called the Leeson Park School of Music, and they taught through a method called the coloured strings method, which is like people might have heard of Suzuki, which is through the ear, but the coloured strings method was music all through colour. So for anyone who has a thing called synesthesia, which Messiaen had or Rimsky-Korsakov had, it's fascinating to combine like any of your senses. Some people will play a D major chord and they'll smell sausages, or they'll play an A flat major chord and feel cold. But it was a beautiful way for children to learn music through song and dance and games. And then they kind of allowed children to sort of naturally progress to whatever instrument they felt a pull towards. So for me, I just loved the kind of tactile feel of the piano, whereas my sister went towards the violin. And it was a beautiful way to learn music. And then went to the Royal Irish Academy of Music here, and then on to the Conservatoire in Paris, and then the Academy in London as well. And I've kind of
my word. And when you were four, was there any doubt in your mind about the piano, or did you kind of flirt with any other instruments?
Yeah, I later on played a little bit of violin and loved, actually preferred traditional music on the violin. Actually, that's what my sister plays a lot now in Paris as well. But no, the piano was always the instrument for me. I just always had an affinity with it. And it was kind of the opposite. You know, a lot of my friends had to be forced to practice the piano. They'd have to clock out and they'd do their 20 minutes a day. Whereas my mom had to do the opposite. She was pulling me off the piano to go and do my homework kind of thing. I just always loved it. And there was an amazing lady, my mom worked with, whose family would have fled sort of Nazi occupied Vienna at the time, and they ended up in Ireland. And she lived in those apartments by Leeson Street Bridge. And there's a beautiful memory I have of my dad going in with the sheep trailer and loading this piano, this upright piano, onto the back of the sheep trailer and driving it out of the leafy suburbs of Dublin too. That was the first piano I ever had, and I still have that in my parents' house now to this day. So,
as an image, I suppose that combines the two major influences in your life.
Absolutely. And then I was lucky that I was playing on I think I was Pat Kenny's first year on the toy show in 2000. I'm sure it was his first year. And after that, then I got a really nice grand piano, which was brilliant. Not bought by RTE or anything like that. But
okay, the fees were good then.
I was going to say definitely not. But it was great to be able to progress onto a probably more suitable instrument at that stage.
And you were, after you'd done your Leaving Cert, though, you were studying to be a vet.
Yeah, I went to UCD. I had a kind of a dichotomy of I knew I only ever wanted to be either a musician or a vet, funnily enough. And I thought, I got the points for veterinary, and then I deferred it for a year and I went to the Academy in Dublin, and they had a 1 year diploma, which I thought, well, look, I don't want to start a degree and then move off from it. So I thought they do a 1 year diploma in performance and teaching. And I did that. Then I went to veterinary for a year and I thought, okay, I'll get a sense now of what I really want to do. And sadly, I didn't. I just really loved both of them, as different as they were. And then I mentioned in, I think, the article that I had a point where I was trying to do like international piano competitions and also do vet exams. And the system in Ireland, not to criticize it at all, but it's different to like friends of mine in America who would have done, let's say, an engineering degree, a music degree. They'd really be accommodated to do a double major. But like, obviously in Ireland, the structure isn't there for that. So you're having to kind of try and balance exams and performances. And if you miss something, you're just in trouble, as opposed to someone going, don't worry, you can take that exam next week. And I was just so exhausted. And I literally was that person that you never think you'll be, where I was driving my car and I just fell asleep at the wheel. And big wake up moment. And after that, then I just sadly I'd finished my first year of veterinary and I was in second year, and I just had to go in and say to them, look, lads, this literally will kill me.
Yes. And like, you weren't hurt in the crash.
No, I was very lucky that, like, I mean, God, it could have been very different. But I suppose as I fell asleep, my foot came off the accelerator and I just ended up going into the crash barrier as opposed to the other side of the road. But it could have been, I'll never forget, there was a lovely lady, whoever she is, maybe she's listening to this, and she just kind of pulled up in the hard shoulder behind me and came up to my window and was like, are you okay? Because she obviously just saw this car veer off the road. And that was a bit of a wake up call. But I suppose the logic in my head was that, look, I'm from a farm, and you know, from an animal husbandry perspective, okay, yeah, I might not be performing castrations on dogs, but I'll tell you, like, from a hands-on perspective, like, I was home recently doing a trio tour in Ireland, and every night the two girls I was playing with went home, and I was down the fields till about 3 o'clock with my dad lambing and, you know, doing all the different things you have to do at that time of year. So I still have a very hands-on involvement in the farm with my dad when I'm home.
Should you? I only mean this because you use the word hands quite a lot. Are your hands insured? Is that like because they're your primary tools as a penist? So is there any worry you might injure them on
do you know
the
what?
Arm?
I've been asked this before, and I always say it's actually about technique. So you know, like anything in life, there's actually a technique to catching a sheep. You know, now if I get someone who doesn't catch sheep to catch a sheep, they might end up getting a nasty injury. Whereas I think if you have the right technique, it's not to say you won't get injured, but actually you really mitigate the chances of that happening. But no, I don't have my hands insured, actually. And it's only because a friend of mine is an actuary and she actually went through the whole process with me. And her determination was that, you know, you could pay and pay and pay. But then if you did have an accident, there'd be so many outs probably from insurance company that would say, well, sure, go off and teach the piano or do something else. So my decision anyway, not to give anyone else any advice, but was just to not get them insured. But no, of course, you can have accidents. And I mean, my music teachers growing up, I obviously would have had to lie to a lot of them. And they're like, you're not doing too much in the farm, are you? You're like, no, nothing at all. Definitely not putting my hands into cow crushes and doing all sorts of, we'd dip the sheep every summer and we'd be pulling hay bales everywhere. And, you know, friends of mine, it's funny in London, like I've got some friends that love going to the gym. And like, whilst loads of them might have these kind of, you know, what I'd call like cosmetic bodies, they're not farm strong. Because, you know, you could bring them to the farm and say, listen, we're going to lift those 50 bales over there. And I tell you, they're blowing after five minutes, you know. So there is a thing, I really believe, in that kind of farmer strength. And I see it with like people you'll meet up in Wicklow who, my God, they'd lift a car if they had to, you know. Yeah. But they might not look like it, but you see the power in them. Or like someone like Sean O'Brien, my mom worked with his sister in the bank. And like just raw strength. And you put that then on a rugby pitch and like you see the damage they do versus maybe lads who've never had that upbringing. So I think there's massive benefits, both mentally and physically, to coming from a farming background.
Yeah. So when you then gave up the veterinary, did you move to London at that time?
Yeah. So I finished my degree in, it was funny, the academy in Dublin allowed me to go, because I'd done the diploma, I was able to slap back into second year actually. So I hadn't lost a year. And then I did my second year here. I went to Paris for my Erasmus year. I was lucky. I was doing, there's a brilliant, like Ireland's premier piano competition is the Dublin International Piano Competition. And at that point, it was sponsored by AXA, which was great. And after that, on the jury of that was a very famous pianist called Jacques Rouvier. And he was one of, like, he's probably Paris's most famous piano teacher. And he invited me to come and study with him for a year. And then I came back here and finished fourth year. So I only actually kind of did 2 years here of the 4 year degree. And then after that, I went to London to the Royal Academy there, and I've just sort of set up shop in West London now in Chiswick.
Yeah. And what's the trajectory in terms of employment? Because I suppose, you know, the people might think, well, if you have a band, you try and get a record deal or you know, how does it work in the classical world?
Yeah, so I'm very much a freelance musician, so I love that. So there's times where, like, I've played concertos with all the major orchestras in Ireland, like the RT Concert Orchestra or the Symphony Orchestra or Irish Chamber Orchestra. Then I run a festival, which I've got a little flyer here, the West Wicklow Chamber Music Festival, which is coming up. I've got a cheeky little plug in here for the 20th to 24th of May, if anyone's interested. And I love all those different aspects. So sometimes I'm performing, sometimes I'm running the festival. I do a little bit of teaching in London as well. And I think now, I was just having a conversation outside in your kind of green room with someone about this. Like, most musicians now have, as you said, little nixers or little things going on here and there, because I think it's very hard just purely off performance to make ends meet. And, you know, I think Ireland's really doing a great, like, if you compare it to what's happening in the UK with the Arts Council, where it's cut, and organisations getting chopped all over the place, whereas Ireland, to be fair, has really, really always done so well to support the arts sector. And even this, like, minimum employment or whatever it's called,
minimum wage
for artists. So, like, there's great supports in this country. But I'd say, if anyone young now was saying to me, I'm thinking I'm going into the profession of classical music, like, I would definitely say you need to have tough skin, definitely, but also that mixed portfolio approach, I would say, to not just expecting to make your income off purely performance, but doing other things as well, whether it's running a festival or running, you know, maybe gig nights or whatever you might do as well. Even some of my friends also work in the tech side of stuff, you know, like maybe renting out guitars or basses or whatever else. So I think, you have to have an entrepreneurial outlook in this career to survive, I would say.
And would a lot of your work be, are you playing solo in a lot of your work? Are you playing with orchestras? I assume it's a mix.
Yeah, it's a mix. So like when I've been with the orchestras, you'd be doing what are called concertos, where you're playing like a solo work with orchestra support kind of thing like that. And then a lot of just piano, like in my festival now in Wicklow, I'm opening the first night with just me on piano solo concert. Then I play a lot of what's called chamber music. So with quartets or trios or quintets. I got to do a really cool gig in the Consul a few years ago. It was the 100-year anniversary of Rhapsody in Blue by Gershwin. So we played Rhapsody in Blue with the Consul Orchestra. So it's always very different. And I like to play a lot with singers as well. So performing with like sopranos, tenors, baritones. And I love the variety of that, because I think solo piano is brilliant, but it can be a bit lonely in terms of if you're a sociable person. And there's some days where I'd like start talking to someone on the checkout in Sainsbury's just because I'm like, God, I haven't actually spoken to a human today. You know, so sometimes it's actually really nice when you've got chamber music things happening that you look forward to that rehearsal or whatever else is kind of going on. And like one really cool thing recently, that there's a festival, well, there's a lady who some people might have heard of called Nanette de Valois, who actually was Irish but went to London and set up the Royal Ballet there, which is no mean feat, but a lot of my friends in England have no idea that she was born in Ireland. Mm. And I kind of spend my whole time in London telling people she's born in Ireland, she's Irish, like make sure she's credited fairly. And I commissioned a new piece to honour her in the festival in 2024, and she moved to London and died in Barnes at the age of 102, I think. And we played the piece there just recently in the festival, which was really lovely to kind of bring it full circle from West Wicklow to Barnes and her kind of slight, I mean, she lived a lot more a fancier life than style than I probably do, but it's really lovely to use, I suppose, the cultural history of West Wicklow, and there's plenty of it at Rusper, and, you know, the sinking of the Blessington Lakes that a lot of people, you know, aren't aware are a man-made reservoir, you know, and there's just so much local history in the area to use to influence commissioning new pieces of music instead of just kind of commissioning someone for the sake of it. Having a kind of a real justification behind it, I think, gives the whole piece and the audience a greater image of what's actually going on and what you're trying to achieve by doing that and commemorating historical events locally.
Mm. There's still, though, is it too much to say that the classical music is somewhat of the poor relation in Ireland in terms of the support it gets and the recognition it gets in the arts in general? If people think the arts in Ireland, they think of theatre and literature. And
yeah, I think the last study I read, I think it did say like 5% of people who'd say they actively engage with listening to music would listen to either jazz or classical music. So it's definitely a small but unbelievably loyal, I'd say, audience base. But I think that's the challenge for people like me, like younger people in the sector, is that we're always trying to engage a new audience, because I think if we don't cultivate a new audience, it is an art form that could easily die off. And that's one focus. We like in the festival in Wicklow, like we offer 50% reduction to students, for example. So like we can't offer more than that without getting more funding. But we're doing everything we can to try and encourage a younger audience base, or even like this lady here, China Moses, who's coming. I saw her headline London Jazz Festival a few years ago, and she's just one of the best soul singers you'll ever meet in your life. And like she's coming to our little town in Blessington. And, you know, like it's just like that's the kind of legacy I'm hoping to leave behind with starting this festival, that like when I was growing up, there was no classical music really in West Wicklow. I always had to go into the National Concert Hall to see any level of classical music. And that's one thing I felt very passionately about when I got to a certain age, to be able to say, I want to be able to have concerts for people in rural Ireland on our doorstep. And, but yeah, I would say my thing is, look, don't knock it till you've tried it. Like anything, I might not be into a certain sport or a certain genre of music, but I would never knock anything till I try it. So I've no problem if someone comes to, I don't know, a string quartet concert and says, you know what, that really wasn't for me, I'd be like, well, Seamus, do you know what, don't worry, like that's fine, at least you gave it a shot. But I do have a bit of a bugbear with people who will knock any genre of music without actually giving it a fair crack.
Yeah, well, I suppose maybe people who might know about it may have a kind of a classist view of it, that it's for posh people.
Which is nonsense. You can turn up to our festival in, I mean, you have to wear clothes, but turn up in jeans and a t-shirt, you know, there's no problem. There is no, like, you're right. People sometimes have this perception that if you're going to, I don't know, opera, you need to go in black tie. And that's also a nonsense. I go to the Royal Opera House all the time, literally wearing what I'm wearing now here. Mm. And I think, again, that can be just a bit of a lazy trope sometimes for people maybe to justify, that's why I don't go, because it's for posh people. And it's like, I'm not posh. I went to the most state public school in Dublin, where, you know, I grew up on a farm. Like, there's nothing privileged about my background in terms of, like, my parents were able to make sure that we had access to music, or, you know, they sent us to everything from swimming to ballroom dancing, even the whole lot. But there's certainly no reason why anyone should feel they're not welcome at any classical music recital. Yeah. And to be fair, I think the sector is trying to make sure that people know that all the time.
Do you have to rehearse a lot? Is that like a daily thing for you?
Yeah, I'm really lucky. So in London, I live in a tiny flat and I couldn't have like a grand piano in there. It's just too small. So I'm very lucky in West London. There's like four or five people who have nice pianos who I go to their house. And it's nice for me. It's like getting out to the office every day and practicing. But I would try and probably do at least 4 to 6 hours a day, something like that. Now, obviously, there's days where you can't. You might be traveling or doing a concert and you want to conserve energy. But in general, I'd feel good if I was getting at least 4 done a day.
Crikey. And would you then be rehearsing specific things, or are there like you need to kind of exercise your muscles?
Like anything, like sometimes you're just kind of perfecting stuff you know already. Sometimes there's new repertoire you have to learn. Like at the moment, I'm learning a whole pile of new things for like festival coming up in Switzerland, or even the festival in Wicklow. So like I always like to have like a 50-50 balance of stuff I'm keeping ticking over, because I find like if you push that balance too much on one side and you're just learning like 3 hours of new music, that's quite a lot. So I always like to try and balance it with stuff I'm perfecting and new things all the time. And then you've got a nice, you're never getting bored of anything as well. And you constantly have that new stimulus of learning new music or new styles or new rhythms. Or I've actually commissioned an amazing jazz pianist called Greg Felton to write a new solo piano piece for me for the opening night in the West Wicklow Festival on 20th of May. And he's written a piece that I usually never play with all these very interesting Indian traditional rhythms. And it's such a complexity. And he's even sending me like little WhatsApp videos of like how to count it. And it's so different from Western classical traditional counting. And I like to put myself in those sort of different challenging situations rather than only playing Mozart and Beethoven all the time.
And when you you're doing that, if you mentioned this event in Switzerland, are there people that who come in to kind of guide you a bit, give you notes to tell you if you're playing it right, I suppose, to put it bluntly?
It's funny. Within the industry, I think you'd find people you trust or you respect. Like, so I'd very often go back to even previous teachers of mine or also just other people in the profession and say, look, I've got this gig coming up. Can I play this piece through for you? And you just find a room somewhere and play it through for them. And, you know, people you trust might say, listen, if that's really convincing what you're doing, I totally understand what you're trying to get across there. Or someone might say, do you know, when it went into that slow bit, I just didn't really feel like the transition there was organic enough. Or, you know, and anyone with two ears and an opinion can give you that. Like, I wouldn't even necessarily say it has to be another musician. Like, you might naturally deviate towards that, but anyone who's got a strong opinion or a strong sense of performance could nearly tell you if something's convincing or something isn't, you know. Like, I think I could do that with if an actor read a monologue to me. I might not need to know the context of the piece, but I could certainly hopefully say to them, listen, that was really convincing, or actually I felt like you were hesitating there, or I didn't really believe you when you said that sentence. And music's the same. Like, there might not be narrative, but you can always tell a convincing performance. You know yourself, if you go to a gig, you'll know when it's a brilliant gig that you've just been so moved by, or if someone's kind of given you 50% and you're just not really feeling it.
In terms of the intention of the composer of the piece, do you have to respect that, or can you kind of mess with it a little bit?
Obviously a big part of what you're doing with those works, you're basically a cover artist, aren't you? And you're putting your spin on something. And I think, again, there's different extremes of how far you take that. But in general, like, let's say someone like Bach now would put nothing in his scores. So he just writes the notes and it's all left completely blank. So you've got such a blank canvas to kind of go in all sorts of crazy directions. But then maybe a composer like Ravel or Rachmaninoff is a lot more maybe prescriptive, but there's still loads of areas for nuance for you to say, okay, how fast do I want to take this section, or how slow do I want to take this section? But in general, I would say, like, sometimes they can be quite prescriptive. Yeah.
Yeah. And how much are you finding that the music, you're playing Bach and all the greats, so to speak, but like how much new music do you get to play?
Quite a lot now. Like, I mean, I play a lot of 20th and 21st century music. I think it's really important to support the composers like of our time. Like I said, people like Greg Felton. And I mean, there's so many incredible Irish composers down to the years, from Emer Noon, who was obviously the first ever Irish person to conduct the Oscar ceremony. She wrote that piece for Ninette de Valwa that I told you about 2 years ago. And we've had commissions in the festival from Anne-Marie O'Farrell and Rona Clark and Gerald Barry. So every year I really try as much as I can to make sure we're commissioning new works by particularly Irish composers. I think that's really important with an Irish festival.
Yeah, and in your kind of international work, are there a lot? And is most of your work, would it be on mainland Europe or would it be in the UK?
Yeah, like mostly mainland Europe. And then I was really lucky. I got to do an East Coast tour in America there in September, which was really brilliant, without getting political. But you know, sometimes in Ireland, we kind of forget that there's also very sane, rational people in America. And sometimes you forget that when you just listen to the news. And I have to say, I met the most incredibly inspiring, brilliant people, which was good for my own sense of stereotyping to come back and go, do you know what? There's brilliant people in that country who they might have gone in an interesting angle at the moment, politically and foreign policy wise. But I met some wonderful people. And same way when I was in China or Japan, I think when you're there on the grounds, and you know, obviously we all take what we take from the news, but you only really get a sense of a country when you're there. And I have to say, there's never been a country that I've been to so far that I haven't thoroughly enjoyed. If you throw yourself in on a cultural end, you're rarely going to be disappointed.
Yeah, indeed. And in Europe, like, what kind of venues are you playing? Like, do huge audiences turn up for things?
Like, the biggest ever, I'd say, I mean, like, obviously in Ireland, the National Concert Hall is probably the biggest venue you can play at, which is about, what is it, 1,500 or so, or give or take people. I think in China, in one of the venues we played was 3,000, and it was really packed. And like, classical music is actually one of the fastest growing industries in China and South Korea. Huh. So the support in those countries and the concert halls they're building are second to none. Like, when I was in Shanghai, I felt like it made New York seem like a third world country in comparison. Like, you should see the investment in infrastructure over there, and particularly in the arts. It's just huge. And I think they really respect Europe so much that they see classical music as this gateway for them to go, oh, we like the look of that. That looks nice. Let's definitely invest in that. And you see, I mean, there's 40 million pianists in China. Like, it's like the numbers are staggering. Like, 40 million people play the piano over there. You know, so
then we have people.
Yes. And like, you hear of people like Lang Lang, who I'm sure people have heard of. I think he's been a judge on The Piano with Claudia Winkleman, that show on Channel 4.
Yeah.
And like, he's like a true celebrity. Like, most people maybe within classical music could walk down Grafton Street and only maybe other people in classical music might recognize them. Whereas I feel like Lang Lang and Yuzha Wang are people who are probably maybe even Joshua Bell or Nigel Kennedy, people like that who have really almost like gone beyond that. But yeah, I'd say that's probably the biggest one I've played out with about 3,000 people, which, to be honest, for classical music, you don't want to mic classical music. The whole point of it is that it's an acoustic art form usually.
Mm.
So you don't really want to play in venues bigger than that, because if you start having to mic classical music, you're sort of losing the essence of how and what context it was composed for. Like, a lot of the music would have been composed, like in Rusper House, when we play these concerts where there's about 100 people in the room, like, they're composed for that kind of salon environment of, you know, after dinner, Schubert would have sat down and played a couple of tunes on the piano, and it's composed for that moment rather than big, you know, amplification.
Yeah. Fierka, it's fascinating speaking to you, and thanks so much. Quickly plug
the, oh my god, yes, everyone listening, you must come
again
to the West Wicklow Chamber Music Festival, where we've got everything, not just from classical music but to jazz and soul and music from musicals, and we've got a family concert called Opera Magic where you can bring your children and have them introduced to the magical world of opera. So check out westwicklowfestival.com.
Fierka, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Fierka Garvey there.
Moncrief weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.